Hello, welcome everybody out there. This is David Collins with Bitnote. We'll be playing some video game music and talking about them. Hope you enjoy. Alright, let's start things off with a falling blocks game that I think is better than Tetris. Want to hear what it is? Have a listen. And that was stage 1-4 music for Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, made by Compile and Sega. Now, Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, as you may have guessed, is actually a bit of a Sonic the Hedgehog spin-off game. It's actually based on a fairly successful series of games called Puyo Puyo, which are basically falling blocks games, you know, a little like Tetris, although, in my personal opinion, I think it's more fun. You see, with Tetris, it's just about forming lines and getting everything arranged, but with Puyo Puyo, you actually have these segments of with beans of two color, and as you drop to the bottom of the screen, they all pile up. Now, if you can join four beans either, you know, horizontally or diagonally, and it can be like in a Z shape, so as long as four beans are directly connected to each other in one group, then they join, make a combo, and disappear. But the key thing is, when they disappear, all the beans from on top of them fall down into place. And if that causes another set of four or more beans to connect, then they disappear too. And that can cause more beans to fall down, and so on and so forth. So one of the whole challenges of the game is actually seeing whether you can, you're not just thinking about this move, you're thinking about the next move and the next move. You're thinking about, okay, do I want to make a quick combination here and get points, or do I want to build it up more strategically so that, you know, I'll have it so that when I complete this set, it will cause this block to fall down that will cause another set to complete, which will cause another. It's all about creating chain reactions. And chain reactions are important, because you're not just like playing against yourself, you're playing against an opponent, often controlled by the computer, but of course it can be a human character, who's also trying to build up the blocks. And whenever someone gets a small connection, what they can do is they can drop a bean on your side of the screen that basically doesn't react with anything and are very hard to get rid of. But if they get a whole lot of chain reactions going, a huge heap of these beans fall on your screen. So you could like be building up this whole strategic little strategy of chain reactions and where one bean would go there, and then suddenly a bean would fall, mean bean would fall right in the wrong location, and suddenly you wouldn't be able to complete it after all. Or else they could just do a whole load of chain links, chain reactions on their side, and suddenly your side of the screen gets flooded with beans, and you're going, oh no, I have to start from scratch. So it's a great game because, like all great games, it makes you make a decision. Do you want to play quickly for the short-term gain, make a whole lot of fast and, you know, make a whole lot of fast connections and hope that all the little beans that make it all, that land on your opponent's screen enough to put them off their gain? Or do you want to go for the big score, build up a nice strategic, you know, combination of skills and combinations and chain reactions, but run the risk that one small bean on your screen could screw the whole thing up? So what often actually I do is just try to go for a bit of a hybrid approach. I try to like try to get enough things to set it up by chain reactions here and there, and like possible chain reactions here and there. But I'm flexible enough so that hopefully, if things got too out of control, I can just make a connection and hope that enough by chance it'll trigger off some of the chain reactions I've built up already. But it's a very nice game. Like I said, I think it's more fun than Tetris. All the you've built. Like I said, the objective is to stop all the beans from building up to the top of the screen. And the music there, which I always like thought was upbeat, actually has a couple of different creators. There is Masanobu Tsukamoto, Insuko Nagao, Masanori Hikichi, and Masayuki Nagao. And like I said, that's from Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, but it's also actually from the original P.O.P.O., which is the game that basically Dr. Robotnik is just a whole basic re-theming off. You know, Sega eventually did release P.O.P.O. in the European market, you know, by itself. I know that there was an Xbox game, but back then they basically just had to combine it with the Sonic the Hedgehog franchise. And actually, the game actually also took quite of inspiration from the Sonic the Hedgehog cartoon series, which is kind of unusual. The cartoons rarely influenced, but that's a whole little topic for another day. I'm going to move on to something a little bit of a mood shift here, but I think it's definitely worth it. It's from one of my favorite games. It's a game that technically you'd look at and you'd think, you know, it doesn't seem to set out to do anything very differently, but it's the way it does it, man. This is a really game I really love, and I'm going to play you one its famous theme from it. Here it goes.
Thank you.
That was the Max Payne theme from Max Payne by Remedy Entertainment, composed by Kartsky Hataka, a Finnish composer. Max Payne was a classic game, classic 3D action game from the mid-noughties, or early noughties more. It was released on the PC, PlayStation 2, Xbox, and it was just, this was one of those games where its real power came across in how it did everything. I mean, the plot is pretty simple. You're a New York cop, you know, because Finnish developed games have to take place in American cities. And essentially, you've basically come home one night to find your wife and family have been murdered, which is pretty damn traumatic. So your character's life doesn't really improve after that. It cuts forward again to you being undercover, and then basically one of your co-workers in the police department also getting killed right in front of your eyes, and then you get framed for the murder, and it kind of still keeps going downhill from there. In fact, you've kind of got the whole theme for the series. Basically, you've got Max Payne, who's, you know, a decent protagonist, who, well, in terms of, you know, a decent human being who never really did anything terribly wrong, and then just constantly goes from worse situation to worse situation throughout pretty much the entire game. And so, in order to try to make things marginally better for himself, he ends up waging a one-man war against pretty much organized crime, every person who's ever plotted against his life, and basically in an effort to clear his name, among other things. That's actually one of the strongest things about it, the emotional intensity of it. He practically goes pretty much crazy through absolutely everything that happens to him, that it actually works with the game, that you're actually, you see, the problem with a lot of games, right, I mean, let's face it, a lot of games have you kill a lot of people, and Max Payne isn't really an exception. You're killing bad guys, mafia and criminals, the whole point, but there's no doubt that you, in any sort of game, you kill a huge amount of people. So trying to actually come up with a plot or theme or background that actually justifies why you're killing a lot of people is almost a challenge for a lot of video games, and in this case they just kind of really just hit the right emotional note, because this is a guy who's had so much crap laid on him, and he doesn't really deserve it. And basically, there are all these forces, mafia, organized crime, there are people who are screwing with him, people trying to kill him. I mean, you know, he's not the aggressor. Everyone transpired against him from pretty much even the beginning, and basically, he's just going crazy with all this, just trying to fight back and just, do you know, blast through pretty much every scenario, go through all the criminal hotspots, through the seedy underworld of New York City, trying to get vengeance and basically try to vengeance for all the wrong that's been committed against him, and also, like I said, try to clear his name. And it actually works, like I said, for the most part. You go through a lot of seedy locations, some more high tech facilities, and when it ends, I don't think it's spoiling the game to say that it ends right on top of an extremely high skyscraper. I mean, boy, it really goes for the whole cinematic approach. I mean, a lot of games try to be cinematic. This one hits all the notes. Great music, as you kind of heard. Great brooding atmosphere. There's even a bunch of Norse mythology and of course, the background of the worst blizzard in New York history to give a lot of emotional intensity to it. And the gameplay is actually pretty good, too. At the time, you're actually able to slow time down to take your time to take aim at your enemies. The whole slowing down time mechanic is something that got, you know, used in nearly every game since. But that was kind of Max Payne was kind of like one of the first games to really use it. There's a huge amount of cinematic influence, you know, even bit characters or some of the enemies will start chatting about movies from time to time. There are a couple of good references. There's one, for instance, where there's a bad guy and he's currently in the toilet and there's a Uzi on a nearby shelf in the kitchen. So, you know, you'll probably figure, if you're a bit of a movie buff, you'll know what movie that references. So, and there's also something like one time there's a drug deal going on, and you can just basically drop down through the skylight right into the middle of the drug deal and shoot all the criminals around there. At the time, I was thinking, boy, you know, this is a fun way to do it. And then I realized, wait a second, are they actually trying to make me imitate Batman or something with the whole, I don't know. But overall, I mean, I just thought it was a great game put together. I think the sequel is actually better in some respects. It's more polished, although the plot line is a little harder to grasp. It's not deliberately confusing or anything. It's just a little more intricate and not quite as well explained. And it's just, like I said, the atmosphere, the insight we get into the character's mind. I mean, how they even took some brave steps with trying to represent, try to use gameplay to represent the trauma that was going through the character's mind. It didn't quite work because it ended up coming across as frustrating platform sections, but I don't mind because these guys are actually trying to do something. They were trying to get some, you know, emotion. They were trying to express something. And I think they made a damn good game with a lot of good locations, a lot of fairly memorable events. And I really just enjoyed the game and just thought a lot of things really worked with it. So, that's the dark, gritty, seedy underworld and of the psychologically tormented Max Payne. Yes, I know the name is a bit cheesy. Just as well they didn't go with Dick Justice, which actually they did consider at one stage. But why don't we move on to something a little more upbeat. And I'll see how many of you know what game this is from.
The most important part of dance is music. So now let us listen to the music and identify the beats.
One, two, three.
But that was too soft. Get down.
And that was Everybody Jump Around by Richard Jacques from Jet Set Radio by Sega. Oh boy. Well, for a start, we've had Richard Jacques' songs play a few times before. He's really made so much cool Sega music. But the game Jet Set Radio, boy, that this is a game that really needs more attention. It basically was one of the sort of Dreamcast games that I always, you know, the Dreamcast for me was such an exciting time. I mean, here was a, it was like, you know, the previous generation with the PlayStation and the Nintendo 64, they showed, yeah, 3D games are possible. But the Dreamcast was showing, it showed the new era of games, more power, and people could just get really creative with 3D. And it was before things became ossified and, you know, people were experimenting, coming up with crazy ideas. And Jet Set Radio was one of them. It was basically, you were a rollerblading, cartoonish graffiti artist. There were several different rollerblading, cartoony graffiti artists. And you were rollerblading all around various stylized Japanese districts. And what you had to do was you had to tag or basically spray paint your logo or name or whatever on several different areas around the city. That was your objective, to get around all these different things. And that involved rollerblading through traffic, and you'd grind, right? Grinding was one of the fun things about it. You'd like skate up, build a bunch of speed, jump, and you hit this railing and you'd go skating along the railing. And then maybe a wall would pass by with all these tags, and you'd have to, as you're skating by on the railing, you'd quickly tag the buildings with your logo on it. And then the railing would suddenly take a 90 degree turn and you'd follow it. And then it was about to end, so you jumped. And you jumped through the air and you landed another railing and you go skating through that and you'd tag a few more. And then you made another jump and went right across a lane of traffic and you'd land on this platform like above the traffic and then have to like quickly do a far more complicated graffiti sign. It was just really cool. There was such a great flow about it. It was like part being a stunt. You had to time your jumps right, and you had to, and the whole time, of course, you know, at first started off pretty easy, but then there was this cop with really bad 90s hair who would start attacking you with this revolver, and then of course if you kept getting at it, practically the military would practically be called in, and all these attack helicopters would be called in and try to shoot you down. And you could actually take down a chopper by just, you know, skating right up onto it and then gliding right across one of their rotating helicopter blades. So I mean, this was a game that just had a lot of fun to it. It was ridiculous. Often you'd be fighting off, you'd get regaining territory from another gang, but they weren't like real gangs. They were like all these cartoony things who was like wearing all these suits or had this ridiculous theme going. So you'd just be going through all these zany, crazy locations and dealing with all these, with this weird style of gang members, and everything was bright and colorful and blue sky and everything. And also, for the there was also a couple of extra stages set in like America, which is like one of them was like the entire of basically Times Square, effectively, and you get really, really high and by skating across all the scenery, and you know, you could even do wall jumps. You could jump against and skate against a wall and jump off again, and that was pretty new at the time. And it was just one of those games with a great sense of flow, and you just go around and it was all just set of fun, and you'd realize technically I'm playing as characters who are breaking the law and causing graffiti, but I mean, you know, there's just the whole sense of escapism and fun and all the larger than life enemies. And it was just one of those games that was kind of countercultural and crazy and fun, but just, it was just fun, really. And that's kind of one of the most important things about it. Whether it was just trying to get the stunts right, or just try to skate down, or just the fun, like, or just like the whole craziness of the situation. So, I don't know, great game, and a lot of fun, all right. As you can hear, it had a pretty funky soundtrack, and indeed one of the characters in the game, not playable, was actually a DJ who would keep giving a running commentary on what was going on and throw down some new tunes. So, music was really definitely a part of this game, so good game, all right. So, let's move on to our last track, and it is from Link's Awakening. I know I don't play much Zelda music, but I mean, this is a classic Game Boy game. I played it a lot. It's Link and Marin's song, and the composer is Yuichi Okase, Kazumi Tōko, Minako Hamano, and Kazuo Ishikawa. Now, Link's Awakening is quite a game. I mean, it was like the first full Zelda game I played. I know there were a couple more before it and everything. But essentially, you're Link, the hero of Hyrule, and you're on a ship, and it's very stormy, and you're just when you think you're, well, you get hit struck by lightning. And it's a bit of a cliche, of course, because when you normally, normally when someone gets knocked unconscious and falls into the sea, what normally happens is they don't get washed ashore some island and somehow revived miraculously. But that's what happens, and you wake up in a bed, and apparently there's a sweet girl called Marin who's nursed you back to health and wondered what's going on, and essentially you're on this quest around this nice big island, going through all finding monsters, these dangers, but also exploring a nice little city and meeting some nice characters as well. It's a beautiful game. It's pretty damn expansive as well. A lot of dungeons, even some side-scrolling platforming sections almost. Most of the gameplay involves going through these dungeons and trying to figure out, hit the right switches, slay the right monsters. There's a lot of action, and like a lot of other Zelda games, you gradually gain more and more weapons and, you know, attack the monsters in new different ways, and it's all fun and light and everything. And it's a good game. I mean, I really like it for that, and it's good. But, you know, what kind of got me a little was the emotion about it. I mean, there's not that much storytelling or not that much character interaction in the game. And but I mean, like I said, you start up by meeting this nice girl and who seems caring and genuine and kind. And even at one stage in the game, there's a nice point where you sit down on the beach and she talks about her dreams and where she wants to go with life. Now, she seems sweet and you really want to interact with her and, you know, just support her or help her or whatever. But the problem is, the character you're playing as is a mute character. I mean, this is kind of Link's trademark throughout the entire series. There was one time he did talk in the CDI games, but most people don't speak of that. The idea is it's that, you know, by not speaking, it's easier for people to project their own character onto the character protagonist themselves. And whether or not that kind of works, it kind of works in some points because you're not distracted. But the truth is, sometimes there's something that happens in the game world and you're just crying out for the protagonist to react to it, to say something. And that was it. It was like every time Marin spoke to you, it was like there was a vacuum. There was like something that you felt your own character had to respond to, but wasn't. Now, actually, you could get him to make some basic, you know, responses, you know, like okay or yes or no, but it wasn't enough. But then there's this moment in the game, a moment that sticks out with me. You've been collecting musical instruments in the game, and part of it is just to get the whole objective at the end. Apparently, that's what you're collecting. Other games have you collect Triforce. In this game, it's musical instruments. And at the same time, you're hearing about how Marin knows the song that's called The Ballad of the Windfish. It's actually a pretty vital song in the game. I mean, it plays a big role. It's, you know, well, I suppose when you're collecting musical instruments, a song would play a role. But Marin sings the song beautifully, and at one stage you collect an ocarina, which is basically a clay wind instrument. Now, the ocarina would go on to play a big role in the future Zelda games, notably Ocarina of Time, where it basically allows you to engage in time travel. But in this game, it's a simple ocarina. And when you speak to Marin, suddenly she says, oh, you've got an ocarina. Why don't we play a song together? And then it's a moment. The two of you playing together, playing a duet. And suddenly it seems like the characters connect in some way that words would never allow them to connect. The power with the song and melody, it's just amazing, and I think is one of the most emotional moments in the game for me. The song is called Link and Marin's Song, and it's from Link's Awakening, developed by Nintendo. I hope you enjoy. And this has been David Collins with BitNote. All the best.